to the Brighton Council Planning Authority meeting for the month of February. Welcome to councillors, senior staff and members of the public gallery. Once again, it's the biggest gallery I think we've had in a long, long time. So, welcome. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the Palawarpakana Tasmanian Aboriginal community as the traditional and original owners of the skies, land and water of Lutruwita, and forward our respects to their elders both past and present. Brighton Council acknowledges the continued connection the Tasmanian Aboriginal people still have to the skies, land and water of Lutruwita that provides them with the food, medicine and craft celebrated through ceremony today. Item two is attendance. Attendance is noted. Item three is apologies. Councillor Geard has asked for an apology to be accepted. Moved by Councillor Owen, seconded by Councillor Della Torre. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item four is public question time and deputations. I think everyone is here to listen to the debate on the item on the agenda. So I don't believe there is any public question time or deputations. We'll move on. Item five is declaration of interest. Does anyone like to declare an interest on anything on the agenda this evening? We'll note that no interest has been declared. Item six is council acting as a planning authority. In accordance with the provisions of Part 2, Regulation 25 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures, Regulations 2015, the intention of council will act as a planning authority pursuant to the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993 is to be noted. In accordance with Regulation 25, the council will act as a planning authority in respect to those matters appearing under item 6 on this agenda, inclusive of any supplementary items. Item 6.1 is a development application at 1 Radius Drive and 28 Stanfield Drive, Old Beach, for 27 multiple dwellings as part of the St Anne's Retirement Village. And the reference is DA 202452. And I'll hand over to Jo for an explanation.
Thank you, Chair. Just to start off, the application was advertised for 27 residential units, but that was incorrect and was noted in the report. The application was actually reduced to 26 units during the RFI process, but the advertising didn't reflect that. We've had a look at it, but it doesn't substantially change the application, and if it does, it creates a lesser impact, I suppose. So we don't see any issue with that. So just to kick off, proposal was for 26 additional dwellings at the St Anne's Retirement Village. They're to be sited adjacent to the eastern boundary of the site, as well as between the existing clubhouse and some dwellings along Salada Drive. The units will comprise a mix of 1, 2 and 3 bedrooms. They'll have private outdoor space and a carport for one vehicle. Some dwellings will also be able to accommodate jockey parking for a second vehicle, which is shown in the annexure E that was included in the documentation. The proposal seeks to create a second access from Stanfield Drive, constructed on the southern side of the existing cul-de-sac that will wrap around the area currently used for the clubhouse and provide access to 10 of the proposed dwellings. Proposal includes connection to sewer water, stormwater and an extension to the existing earth berm along the Eastern Highway boundary, which will serve as noise attenuation, and the noise report submitted demonstrates that that is all required to mitigate any noise from the highway. As you can see from the report, the application is discretionary for a number of standards, including parking, sustainable transport code, exterior colours, sensitive or residential use adjacent to the East Derwent Highway, and the application of the Bushfire Prone Areas Code, because as a retirement village, the dwellings are classed as a vulnerable use in the definition of the code. We have the documentations endorsed by TFS to say that that's all in order. In addition, the application was referred to the Department of State Growth, TAS Networks, TAS Water and TAS Gas Pipeline. Any comments and conditions from those agencies have been included in the report and in the draft conditions. The application was publicly exhibited in mid-November for a period of 2 weeks as required by the Act. you will recall that, you know, quite a number of the residents came to the November meeting, and there were some people that spoke during public question time regarding this. So it's obviously garnered a lot of interest during the exhibition period and since then. By the time the exhibition had concluded, there were 118 submissions made. This included some group submissions or petitions and individual representations. A number of the representors were represented on more than one submission. Details are in the report as to that. Whilst there were a lot of representations made, they can be summarised into concerns about loss of campervan parking, how the roadways will be managed, including speed, signage, on-street parking and safety, vehicle movements, pedestrian access, contract lease agreements between the owners of the retirement village and the residents, loss of amenity, including the green spaces, privacy and the state of current landscaping, standards of existing infrastructure, such as water, sewer and power, any future proposed roundabout, which has been a point of discussion for quite a long time, and stormwater management. Following exhibition, we provided a summary of all those responses to the applicants to consider. That's our usual course of action. And they've provided a response, which are attachments C and D in the documentation. In addition to that, the applicants have provided an updated master plan, which is attachment E, which demonstrates that probably the original application was a bit short in that it didn't show that they could actually accommodate additional car parking spaces as jockey spaces on the site. So whilst they initially showed one car parking space per unit, there was capacity for the two that you would be required to provide under the code for that. And that master plan also showed some additional visitor parking across the site. That results in a shortfall of four car parking spaces all up. The amended master plan also included details of a pedestrian path around and through the site to offset the requirements for any pedestrian paths adjacent to the road. And you'll note from the TIA that there's also, it has addressed the fact that the road is classed as a shared facility and is suitable for pedestrian use at slow speeds. Just one other thing while we were reading through the conditions this afternoon. Condition 19 refers to the pedestrian paths. The wording should read, pedestrian paths must be provided in accordance with the endorsed plan. So we would like to remove the words two parking areas. So instead of it saying pedestrian paths must be provided two parking areas in accordance with endorsed plans, that's because the pedestrian paths that have been supplied don't actually lead to a set parking area by definition. It was amended, but for some reason hasn't been picked up prior to going to the agenda, so I apologise for that. But if the Planning Authority could consider approving that change, that would be appreciated. In conclusion, this has been a difficult application to assess. There's been a lot of concerns by the residents, and we take them on board. A lot of them are issues that the Planning Authority doesn't have any control over and more between the landowner and the residents and whatever contractual agreements that they have in place. We have endeavoured to address as many issues as we can throughout this and through the process and through conditions included on the draft permit. But I suppose after a comprehensive assessment, it's considered that performance criteria for the matters can be satisfied and is recommended for approval.
Thanks, Jo. Just a couple of quick questions from me to start, if I may. The roundabout I'm just a little bit confused as to why we had to get them to design a roundabout when most of all the access for this particular development will be down on the East Irwin Highway at the end of Stanfield Road, or Stanfield Drive.
You want to go, or do you want me to?
I can respond to that. There's been much debate as to whether a roundabout will be required at the intersection of Riviera Drive. The Department of State Growth, following inquiries from council in relating to rezonings within Old Beach and concerns being raised by council, have undertaken a corridor study of the East Irwin Highway in an attempt to get some clear direction as to what future upgrades of the East Irwin Highway might look like. At this date, we still don't have the outcomes of that corridor study. Early feedback have indicated that perhaps a roundabout may be preferred at the Old Beach Road intersection rather than Riviera Drive. The intent of getting the applicant to show a roundabout was to demonstrate that a roundabout could still be constructed at the Riviera Drive intersection, even if a link from Stanfield Drive was no longer available. Essentially that it could be done and contained within the existing road reservation and not require any land from the St Anne's property.
Joe, the access obviously onto the East Irwin Highway from Stanfield Drive, obviously we'll see an increase in traffic. Is there any other treatments that have been considered, or could we condition a permit for them to upgrade access in to those areas, or is that totally out of our control?
Pass that one to Lee as well. He's more across the traffic side of things than I.
Yeah. So the traffic impact assessment that was submitted with the application included a traffic survey that looked at traffic generation. In summary, this particular development isn't a large generator of traffic. You know, there will certainly be an increase, but the level of service of the existing intersection is essentially affected by increasing traffic on the East Irwin Highway. It's not this particular development has no material impact on the operation and the future operation of that intersection, of the existing intersection of Stanfield Drive and the East Irwin Highway. So we have included a condition for some minor upgrades of the existing Stanfield Drive intersection, subject to approval from State Growth. State Growth were not fully supportive of the upgrade as proposed by the applicant. There was concern that it may actually create a decrease in safety of the performance of that intersection. But we have included that condition so that it's still required, and it will allow some further discussion with State Growth. And if State Growth are supportive, then there will be a requirement for some minor upgrading of the intersection. But yeah, in essence, the loss of performance over the 10-year window of the existing intersection is a function of the increased traffic on the East Irwin Highway, not any increase in traffic from Stanfield Drive.
Thank you. Under the medium density part of our scheme, I think there's a rule in regards to not having vehicles leave in a forward-facing direction. Is that applicable in this particular area as well?
No, so this site is subject to the St Anne's particular purpose zone, which replaces requirements. So it creates its own zone requirements. So the general residential zone requirements that we would normally apply, say Open Gauge Brook or Bridgewater or Brighton, don't apply in this instance.
Yeah, thank you. And Joe, can you just touch on for all of us the private road scenario in regards to parking on that council obviously I assume doesn't have any great control over what is parked on a private road?
That's correct.
It's a Lee again, is it?
Yeah, it's more about Lee. I'll defer to him.
Yes, so council's maintenance and ownership of the public road finishes at the intersection of Stanfield Drive. The roads beyond that point are all privately owned and are considered in much the same way as a shared access within a unit development. As such, council has no authority over parking and access within that private property, and irrespective, we don't have delegated parking authority, so we don't currently have authority to issue infringements on public roads, let alone within the private property.
And lucky last question from me at this point. Just in regards to, we received an email from one of the residents in regards to on the plan as presented, some land which is currently leased to residents in the village is now being touted as being car parking spaces. What's the deal with that?
So that's not a planning consideration. Any lease agreements between the residents and the owner is entirely up to them. The negotiation, council don't have any, or the planning authority don't have any impact on that.
So that would be got a lease, it would be a civil matter if the residents wanted to take it to a civil court, they could obviously argue that, but not under the planning scheme.
That's right.
Cheers. Thanks, Jo. Councillors, I've taken enough time. Who's up? Councillor Whelan.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just on the Mayor's point, just under the Act, a leasee is not considered an owner, wouldn't be required to be notified before the development is submitted to Council.
No. So the Act requires that the owner of the land, which is the retirement village, is notified by an applicant, but there's no further requirements other than for council or Crown consent.
So jockey parking is permitted as a way of formally parking in that zone? Yep.
Yeah. So under the within the planning scheme, for residential jockey parking is permitted for residential use, and so in this instance, the jockey parking is for resident parking for and basically allocated to each respective unit. So it's not being allocated for visitor parking or shared parking. It's essentially allocated for each of the relevant units.
I have a question. There are the original plan 7 years ago. There are several issues that are yet to be complied with, things like landscaping, footpaths. Is there not a requirement for those conditions to be complied with before another approval is granted?
No, so that is essentially, it's a separate issue. So the process would be generally that when a development is completed, so once all of the units are completed and have their certificates of compliance, we would then send a planner or our compliance officer now down to do a permit check, and then we would identify what matters remain outstanding and what needs to be addressed at that stage. Currently, I think there's 4 units that haven't been completed. We've done a quick audit over the last couple of days. Having said that, I did write to the owners back in October, December about the state of the central spine pedestrian path. During a site inspection yesterday, I did realise that that hadn't been addressed, and you know, generally the paths are in poor state of repair that have been created, but that is a maintenance issue that's not really a council issue. They've been created so they meet the requirements. Having said that, with the landscaping plan and the amended master plan that shows the paths and the connectivity through the site, and there are conditions in the permit to ensure that they're all upgraded and maintained to a certain standard as well. So, and that's the conditions 18 and 19 that are in the draft conditions in the report.
That's going beyond the
permit that we're
looking at now, but the entire master plan and the previous.
So we've looked at that because it's an intensification of the site, and that because those pathways are relied upon to not put in paths and things. So in conjunction with the shared roads, we've required that they meet a certain standard.
And effectively the developers amending the master plan anyway.
They need to comply with that master plan, yeah.
I guess the trouble, Mayor, through you, is going forth, is most of the issues that I have been covered. But I would just add that it's been a long-held desire, and it's basically a question to Lee and Joe, long-held desire that and a benefit to all the residents in that area, that there would be a roundabout there for safe access to and from the highway in both directions. And also the possibility in time to have a bus route through there. No way you're going to get public transport in there at the moment. And I do have concerns about one way in and one way out when you've got a large number of people in a small space. My other concern, have we lost all hope that we're ever going to get a roundabout there, or is it not necessary ever? It's been a long-held...
We have been unable to get any clear direction from the Department of State Growth and an outcome on the corridor study as to whether a roundabout is required or desired at that location. As I mentioned earlier, some of the initial feedback that we have received from them is that it's uncertain and that it's... the high possibility that a preferred location for a roundabout would be at the Old Beach Road intersection based on the network modelling and what have you that looking at. So, in short, we've not been able to get any certainty from the Department of State Road.
How does that help Stanfield Drive? One at Old Beach Road? Anyway, that's a rhetorical question. You can't expect to answer. The other issue, I think this parking, the way they've come up with this jockey parking, is rubbish. I think it's a cop-out, and I'm not real happy about that. As I say, it's probably been answered, and there were concerns of other councillors. So, as I say, it's the trouble going forth. You can't get in all the good questions first.
Sorry for jumping in so early.
I know you were. You're damn keen.
Have a little list. Councillor De La Torre.
If I may, Mr. Mayor. My concern is around the pedestrian pathways and accesses that have been proposed and the fact that they go around the back of all the properties, and I just don't think they're going to be safe or efficient or that they're going to be used all that much, which then pushes people onto the roads, as has been discussed in the traffic impact assessment. But I think the thing that I think has been missed in this is the number of frail and elderly people that are using this area, and the fact that we're inviting more visitors and guests into that area that don't know the road overly well. There's no enforcement of speed limits, no enforcing of parking, and we're pushing larger vehicles onto the roadway by removing that parking area for caravans. I wonder how we've come to the assessment that it is safe and convenient access in that space, and if you could elaborate on that a little more.
Can you talk about the
Yeah, so I can address some of that. So the original application, firstly, there is no requirement under the planning scheme to provide large vehicle parking whatsoever. The original application came through with a significant shortfall in the number of parking spaces. We considered that that it didn't satisfactorily address the performance criteria, in that it meant that there was a higher likelihood of vehicles parking on the shared road, and the reliance on the shared road for pedestrian access sort of resulted in an unsafe environment. The applicant has gone back and demonstrated that their shortfall in parking is now fairly minimal, so that they're actually providing more visitor parking than is actually required under the scheme, but still a shortfall in the resident parking. That parking, however, is fairly consistent with the rest of the development, from various site visits to the, there is, has been relatively low traffic volumes, low traffic speeds, and minimal on-street parking during those visits. Our thoughts were, they have a traffic impact assessment by a suitably qualified person that supports their application. We have considered it, and I guess, based on the original parking and pedestrian access, our recommendation probably would have been for a refusal. But given that the shortfall in parking has been significantly reduced, then the impact on pedestrian safety has been further reduced. We believe that it will operate substantially, as it has done for, a lengthy period of time.
If I can just add to that, so with reference to the pedestrian paths around the back of the buildings, that was flagged, and we had a chat with the applicant a couple of weeks ago and talked about that. They've agreed for a condition, so on the plans it actually has specified 1.8 metre high colourbond fence, and then you'd have the path, and then you'd have the berm, and that was not acceptable to us. So they've agreed to, for a condition, for fencing to be the standard residential fencing, which is solid to 1.2 and then open up to 1.8. That will have a dual benefit, so we'll provide that safety on either side of the fence and some passive surveillance as well. There's lighting included in the plan, and some landscaping, things like that. So hopefully it'll become a nice place, and it'll be a place where if somebody using those paths, they can interact with the residents as well as, whether they're on one side of the fence or the other. So that sort of safety issue has been considered through that condition as well.
Right in the report, thank you. If I may, just one more. With that shortfall of parking, and I guess my question is in relation to the lessee that is unlikely to grant approval for parking on their land. What is the outcome in that scenario if we grant a permit that they can't provide the parking that we've asked them to under the plan?
So there's a requirement for a parking plan as a condition of the permit, so that can be addressed through that, and if they need to relocate that, they'll need to organise that and prior to being able to get our approval.
In regard to the traffic impact assessment, that wasn't done when there were camper vans and motorhomes parked on the road. And this development that's what will happen. The result will be people who have these homes and caravans will necessarily have to park on the road. The roads are already quite narrow. I found when I went there, I parked opposite somebody's driveway. They would never have got out if I'd stayed there. So if there are several motorhomes, and the common are quite large, parked along the side of the street, And we're also saying that pedestrians can use the street rather than footpath. So in that scenario, we have motorhome, caravan, whatever, parked along one side of the road. That narrows the road. Then we have somebody, perhaps with a wheelie walker, sorry, shouldn't generalise, trying to access the road, and then we have traffic, we have cars and buses, and not buses, we never get a bus, but cars and trucks. Should there not be another look at that assessment under those conditions?
So, as I mentioned previously, based on the original shortfall in parking, that was very much our concern. It's a requirement of the conditions of the permit that the on-street parking be delineated, and some of those on-street parking spaces which they're proposing are actually indented, so that the vehicles would be actually off the road. As far as the road width goes, they are 6 metres wide, which is generally the minimum most residential, smaller residential streets are 6 metre seal widths, so they are comparable in width to a residential street or cul-de-sac. I guess it is still a possibility, but the likelihood or the occurrence of those larger vehicles is somewhat reduced by the increase in parking spaces. Having done a drive around there on a number of occasions, there are some properties that have motorhomes parked on their own property. So they are, you know, there are some instances where the motorhomes are not parked on the street. But obviously, there are, in the order of 9 or so large motorhomes which are currently parked on the land which is to be developed, and they will have to go somewhere. Given the reduced speed, the low speed environment, and the fact that the on-street park, visitor parking and shared parking is going to be designated, it will reduce the risk of there being random on-street parking, which would cause issues with sight lines and so on.
One more little question. Under the original plan, there was a plan for public open space, community access, community availability. So a clubhouse was built. And apparently recently they had a plan to expand that clubhouse so it would fit more people in it. Under this plan, that access or that availability will be taken away because there are houses so close to this existing club room. Then there's no possibility for those club rooms to be expanded, which already are too small. Is that not a consideration under the planning scheme?
Unfortunately, under the particular purpose zone that's been in effect for quite some time, it's not a consideration. It hasn't been specified that you must provide a community centre to a certain size and you must provide open space, things like that. So, unfortunately, we don't have any criteria to assess against. And whilst I do understand concerns and we have had conversations, but essentially, if that's the application that the owner has submitted, we need to assess against a planning scheme, and there are no standards to assess in relation to those community facilities.
Councillor Weir.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Condition 7 and 9 require trees, landscaping, fencing, undertaken prior to first residential use on the site. If we would be bound to a permit, shouldn't we be including, for example, pathways, parking and the like, including that that were left off the previous stage. Is that something that would occur?
So the requirement for the landscaping plan, which then enacts 7 and 9, includes pedestrian pathways and things like that. So that is linked back to condition 5. So they will need to enact that plan as part of conditions 7 and 9.
And constructed prior to any...
any first
residential
use. Yep.
Can I ask a question? Who would control... the building surveyor that would issue an occupancy certificate. Mm-hmm. At what stage would council become aware of the building surveyor issuing that occupancy? Like, could have well happened before any of those works had been undertaken?
Unfortunately, it could, with the way that the Building Act and the planning legislation interacts. We have quite a good system where if our building department receive that, they'll let us know that it's happened, and then we can. But it then becomes a compliance issue under LUPA because the two acts don't work together. Have been pushing back a bit lately in that there are some terms within the Building Act that says that all other planning permits must be considered, but that's usually before they issue, say, certificates of likely compliance. So start works notices rather than completions, so it's a tricky one, but yes, it, essentially it would fall back to a compliance matter if that occupancy was issued and five of those works been done.
So even if we put a notation in the planning permit, the building surveyor could still ignore that?
They usually do. Sorry.
Just one more from there, if you don't mind. Under clause 2.6.2, which is mentioned on page 15 and 16 of the agenda, would I be right in assuming that all the roads and things in that development would be part of that access ways, manoeuvring and circulation space as mentioned in the performance criteria?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
So would I be right in assuming that all of the roads and access ways through that site would be included as part of access ways, manoeuvring and circulation space as mentioned under the performance criteria there?
Yes.
I have a question.
Councillor Owen.
With the on-street parking, the additional parking, the little pink squares that they've got on the plan, and looking at the use class, how do you think that those parking spots will be used as additional parking instead of people worrying about jockey parking, so I'll use park my car in that space?
Well, they could be notated as visitor parking only.
And police by?
Unfortunately, that would be the body corporate or the landowner in this case.
So in saying that, I refer to the use class on page 10. It says promote and develop an aged care facilities, which I question whether it is, that it is compatible with the character of the area, which includes low density living, high levels of privacy and residential amenity. Now I can see World War III developing over these car parking spaces. So how does that satisfy that?
That clause doesn't really take into account the car parking. Car parking sits separately in the code. I get where you're coming from. And not unfortunately, the way the scheme's written is that these purpose statements really only come into effect if there's a discretion in relation to the building design standards for a particular purpose zone. So that is the design and site coverage, which relates to the discretion there is exterior building finishes. There's a condition in the permit relating to providing a schedule of colours, which was done on the earlier permit as well. So they provided a list of colours that residents could choose as they buy, so that they still have a bit of a choice in what their building might look like. But that is the only discretion under that particular purpose zone that we can consider. And in that case, the purpose statements don't come into effect.
Thank you.
Councillors, if there's nothing further.
One little question, I'm sorry.
Councillor Curran?
Yes.
You're fine.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, Councillor Riley. And I'm sorry to harp back to a previous point. This one, P112, encourage a diversity of local services and facilities, including healthcare providers, local shops, and food services. And also, promote the development of aged care that is compatible with the character of the area, which includes low density, high levels of privacy, and residential amenity. I'm sorry, I failed to see how this development.
So, in that case, sorry for butting in, because the development meets the setback standards and the height standards for buildings. Things like that, that's written in a particular purpose zone, which I can't read through because my laptop has just gone flat, that doesn't come into effect. They're deemed to have been met, and by meeting the acceptable solution, it's considered that they satisfy the zone purpose statements.
You're right. Thanks, Joe, and thanks, Lee. I think you've certainly answered questions presented to you very, very well, so thank you for that. Councillors, in line with that, we obviously are acting under the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act, and we have a recommendation on page 48 for approval of this development. Any alternative motion that is not as per the recommendation has to be delivered to the Chair in writing before it can be debated. With that in mind, we have a recommendation on page 48 for approval. Is anyone willing to move? Thank you. Councillor Irons has moved. Is there a seconder?
Hands are tied, Mayor.
Agreed. It. Councillor Owen has second. We'll open the debate. Councillor Irons.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think this is just one of those incredibly frustrated ones, where I think Councillor Owen summed it up beautifully, that our hands are tied at the end of the day. It's very, very difficult to look at these with your head rather than your heart. I think particularly reading through a lot of the representations in my short time on council, they were some of the most passionate representations that I've certainly come across, and certainly highlight things that I'd love to go into bat for on a personal level, obviously, and things that you know, while we're only obviously hearing one side of things, hopefully can be fixed in the future, but they're not things that can be a part of this assessment. And, you know, I think when we look through all of the solutions that have been proposed by the team, and well done to the Brighton Council team working through this as well, even the ones that were seen to have merit that have gone back have then had a solution put forward. And I think, you know, as frustrating as it is, you know, we've had to approve things that we... Or I personally have approved things that I don't particularly like personally in the past, and I think, you know, what we've got to look at is, at the end of the day, if this is challenged and winds up in a tribunal, which way does it go? And I think, unfortunately, it goes the way of the recommendation, and to go against it would just be putting a lot of ratepayers money and a lot of risk by doing that. So I'm a very reluctant mover in this case, and yeah, sort of wish I wasn't.
Thanks, Councillor Irons. Councillor Owen?
I, too, a reluctant seconder, Mayor. I think we made a mistake 15 years ago when we let St Anne's off the hook when they put the cul-de-sac in at the end of Sandhill Drive instead of building that roundabout access. And, again, the applicant's been let off the hook, I think, in relation to that. The land for that would have been... most desirable, in my opinion, but as Councillor Ryan said, our hands are pretty much tied in under the rules of the game, and congratulate the officers for the work that they've put into it.
Thanks, Councillor Ryan. Is there any further debate? Anyone would like to speak for or against?
I'd just make a comment.
Councillor Curran.
I'm sorry, I'd like to make a comment. This has been one of the hardest to do. I feel so sorry for the residents in this development who will be affected by this development. And I find it extremely difficult to support it, unfortunately. As we've just said, our hands are tied.
Thanks, Councillor Curran. Councillor Whelan.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Again, I think it's one of those ones which we're bound to approve. I think that the particular zone requirements of the planning scheme are exceptionally weak and something that we probably need to review as soon as possible. I think we probably dropped the ball in relation to compliance on a previous stage, and I think we should have a look at that and follow that through. And I think if there's anything to come out of the permit, it would be that we have further enforcement to require that catch-up of infrastructure that's missing already. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Whelan. Councillor Della Torre.
I probably should. Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I don't think I will be supporting this motion. I think there's enough discretion there under the parking and layout of parking areas, the shared pathways with the road, and the lack of visitor parking numbers to sway my mind here to vote against this motion. I doubt it will be successful, but I'm happy to vote against.
Thanks, Councillor Della Torre. I'll speak as well. I will be supporting the motion. Under the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act, unfortunately, sometimes we don't get to vote with our hearts. And I think that's been put forward by most of the speakers this evening, that this development probably doesn't meet what we would consider a fair and equitable outcome for the current residents of that particular area. But as I said, under the Act, we are to assess it wholly and solely on the planning scheme, and it meets the majority of the planning scheme, and where it doesn't, the performance criteria is more than covered and adequately is used in this particular assessment. What else can we say? I think that sort of covers it all. So thank you. The last thing I would like to say and comment on as part of this particular proceeding is I would like to thank the residents of St Anne's over there, because the way you have conducted yourself at both meetings that you have attended is exemplary. It's a pleasure to have you in the room. I hope you come back at some stage under better circumstances. Thank you. Thank you for your understanding. When I met you on site, the reception I got and the time that I was given to explain from our perspective what we are assessing it against, simply thank you. You may go away tonight displeased with us, but I think that you have shown the understanding where we're coming from. So thank you for that. If there's nothing further, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against?
No.
No.
Thank you. The motion is carried. Thank you very much for your attendance at tonight's meeting, and that concludes our Planning Authority meeting for the month of February. Thank you.